Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy, hoy!
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
Well, welcome to this last 30 minutes in AI.
Yeah. Wait, was there more news today, I assume? I mean, I guess there's always more news.
Yes. Thanks, just... it's been... a lot of very cool releases have come out. I'll try to recap. They had the new nano banana model from Google, their newest image model, which looks great, really good text cohesion. I haven't done a side-by-side yet with OpenAI's image gen, but the nano banana images I'm seeing, and particularly the infographics, look really good.
It does a lot of text. It seems like it does a lot of synthesis, and then it prints a lot of text, which, you know, you think about where we were a year ago, where text was a problem. People weren't, the models weren't all that good about it. Now you can do full, like, explainers of the timelines of Back to the Future in, like, one shot.
Yeah, and Google built this using their new Gemini 3 model, which basically what's happening now with image models, and I've said this a while ago, I made a prediction that Midjourney and other companies were going to have trouble keeping up because the image models were now integrating foundational, like really smart. Now they're using reasoning models as they go out and they plan and they create images. So Google announced Gemini 3. Seems to be a really great release from them. It's got top the benchmarks, of course. Then OpenAI said, oh, by the way, we've got Codex Pro Max, and we've also got GPT 5.1 and GPT 5.1 Pro. And so now it's just, what's the best model? I don't know. They're all great.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's the role we're in now.
It's interesting because we've been measuring, I guess, like intelligence capacity, but increasingly I'm noticing that I pay attention to, for lack of a better word, personality. And as we've talked about before, every AI, you know, is some kind of social thumb on the scale. It's skewed towards one flavor of human output versus another. And how interesting that all of them can be just as smart, but they need to collectively as an entity decide how smart and what flavor of smart they want to be.
Yeah, we have an episode of the OpenAI podcast coming out where we're going to talk a bit about with some of the people working on model personality at OpenAI and also sort of unpack some of the things that are going on. Like what OpenAI introduced to GPT-5 was, and now they have GPT-5.1, by the way, in case you weren't paying attention, is the model switcher, which basically, because you can have a model that thinks longer or thinks fast. So now they have a model that switches between that. And then trying to get the personalities consistent between them has been a challenge. And that's the thing you notice, Brian, of advanced voice mode, is that the model behind that's different than the one you're talking to in chat. So we're seeing people try to figure out how to sort of center around that. The new 5.1 has new behaviors. You can tell it, like, I want you to be nerdy. You know, I want you to be to the point. I want you to do this. So, you know, it's a very interesting thing. For the average user, I think the capabilities are kind of, they're on par, you know, between all the frontier labs. When you get into coding, you find that some models are better at certain tasks than others. And then when you get into like deep research, it's just interesting to see the failure cases. I think people now just measure it more in person. That was a thing. When 4.0 came out, you know, people loved it. And then when OpenAI introduced an objectively smarter model, people are upset. Like, no, I liked 4.0 because the personality was more important to me.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the important part is the word liked. We're now at the point where, like, we started off, imagine if in the beginning, Coca-Cola was measured by its new benchmarks of calorie distribution. And at first it's like, oh my God, more calories than ever. You can survive for days and days and days. And then at some point it's like, yeah, but I like the taste of Dr. Pepper better.
Yeah. I mean, I think personality is a crazy idea when you actually take a few steps back, because it's a very new expectation that we would have. We would compare a human personality to any kind of, you know, computer interface, right? And yet that's what we do here. And so that is the expectation. You can't argue with audience expectation. You can only conform to it or be judged. And, you know, I'll, you know, without stepping on the episode, which should come out soon, that's a big challenge. Like there's a lot more that goes into it than just like, oh, what you can control even in training the model. Like there's, you know, if everything switches constantly to give you the best answer, sometimes that answer is going to feel different. And so now it's like, all right, if it feels, if one side is very warm and another side is very cold, it's not like, oh, well, that's what happens when you switch between models. It's like, what changed between us? Personality mm-hmm. yeah. that I'm connecting to. Me? Why are you, did I say something? Did I do something weird? Like, it's fascinating that we're even in that situation, but it shows you that like, look, this is a paradigm that's kind of changing and it's not going to stop changing.
We had a new feature that came out earlier in the week from OpenAI, which was the ability to add group chats. The first they unveiled it in Asia, and I guess they tested it out there to make sure that things didn't fall apart, and then they did a fast follow. And so now, Brian, Justin, and I are in a group chat with ChatGPT.
Yeah, dude. It's definitely ChatGPT. I am super curious because I'm always wondering about, you know, the under the hood bleed over of things. Do you guys, I don't know how I ended up in this lane and I don't know how to get out of it, but there is always one full sentence of throat clearing about how it's going to get straight to the point, even in the tech stuff. And it bled into the group chat, which confused me. And I didn't want to derail our Dungeons and Dragons game that we started playing, Andrew, but I was fascinated. Do you have any insights into, was that a Brian preference that showed up in there, or is that a universal thing that everyone has to go through a full sentence of it announcing that it's not going to waste the first sentence?
I don't know. I have that pop up in some of my stuff, and I think that it might be, it's like I've asked for my personal settings to like get to the point and, you know, be, you know, direct. So I don't know if that's just in general a model thing. I didn't notice it in the other group chats. You know, I wonder, I'd have to go back and look at the history there to sort of inspect
and of
that.
Course,
but what do you think of the overall idea though?
Oh, I love it. I love it. As a matter of fact, the use case, I'll just close the loop on this one thing. The use case is what we did just here. It's like we have a shared project, and rather than each of us go to our separate assistants for one moment, we just all have the same assistant. And I was able to look and see that you told the assistant to come up with, you know, tell us the news this week. Because we all, at this point, we're an engine. We've been doing this show, 16 years now. So news comes in, our flavors of opinions come out. So basically, it's like, what's in the rock tumbler this week, intern? And it came back with the news of the weird. And we'll touch as many of the stories as we feel like. But it was incredibly helpful that it's on the shared record, because now, in general, it's been an Andrew job to gather stories and curate them. And it's been a Brian job to put that in a approachable format on screen, and to not have to ask Andrew or be disappointed or pleased or whatever about the process of getting the stories into my hands so that I could transform them into a way that is a show doc. Oh my God, 10 out of 10. I can't wait to start one for Cord Killers. I can't wait to start one for Great Night, because I've been surprising Justin lately by coming up with backup stories when the comedy subject matter runs thin to have something to fall to. But now to have a shared, to be honest, the number one killer benefit of this, shared reality, no confusion. Like right now, is if you're not in a group chat, it's possible for two people to both say the words, well, I asked ChatGPT, and then they're both confused why they have two different models of reality in their mind. Group chats, that's all I want to do is group chat.
I mean, if anything, my biggest complaint about it is that it's not a smoother chat experience, you know, because I mean, obviously the ChatGPT app is not designed for messaging in the way that messages on iOS or Signal or WhatsApp or anything. There's a lot of creature comforts that go into that, that I'm sure as this, you know, feature either finds an audience, that they will put into there. It also kind of, you know, look, ChatGPT is something that people use a lot. I use every single day. I use it increasingly for more.
I'm using it right now.
Yeah. I use it for more and more things. I'm very much of the belief that we are at the dawning of the age of products, that models matter. Models are interesting. I will always care about models. I will always care about the science behind it. I see a divergent world where how these models are deployed and where they meet our lives, the products are going to be the thing that we talk a lot about. For example, we talked earlier about Nano Banana and that, or Gemini 3. Gemini 3 getting a ton of interest, right? The benchmarks are phenomenal. All these influencers are like, look, my personal benchmarks and my evals, it's doing amazing. It's great. I saw a tweet go viral that's like, hey, where do I play with Gemini 3? I can't see it. And then it's like, somebody replies, it's in AI Studio. And then the response is, the F word is AI Studio. And that beyond whether or not that is a good or bad decision from Google.
And I know all the people involved in that. That's the funny part. Is
yeah. So it's like, but it's like that is the market crying out, give me a way to use this. Like I desperately hear the hype. I want to be a part of it. I want to be at the party. Tell me where the party is and give it to me in a way that's interesting.
In defense of Google, the challenge is that when you're OpenAI or you're Anthropic, you know there's Claude, you know there's ChatGPT, and then you know there's an API. Google there's Gemini, which is like their app. Then there's AI Studio, which my friend Logan Kilpatrick works with. Which is, you know, actually it's one of the ways you can go on, it's the easiest way to, or yeah, they solved a problem. They're trying to find API keys, was hard. And they just said, we'll just go into AI Studio, click it, get your API key and you get it there. But then there's all these different other Google products and you're like, okay, is Nano Banana in Slides? I don't know. It made it some images for me. They weren't great, but I don't know. And I it's hard to tell where they are. It's very uneven. They've got great products and then they're so big.
Well, and
I went into Gemini. All I heard was about how amazing the infographics are. So I go into Gemini. Gemini says, Nano Banana's here. Awesome. Make me an infographic about John Cena's career, which is coming to an end in a few weeks. And it wasn't a great infographic, which leads me to believe that this is not the last version of it. This is not the most recent version of it. This isn't to criticize Google per se. It is just to say that the models are amazing. The products are the future. The products are how we are going to understand this stuff. And so when I play with the group chats in ChatGPT, the number one thing I think of is, why don't I have this in messages? Like the same way that, like, you know, I have those Meta glasses that are fine for recording and taking pictures, but I never use the AI feature on it. Why? Because Meta's assistant kind of sucks. If I had glasses that had ChatGPT on them, I'd probably use them a lot more because I rely upon that model. It already knows a whole lot about me. And that's where we're going.
Yeah. And it's the same problem we talked about with the OpenAI dealing with is which model is which and where is the stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we're entering a world of complexity where you can have very fast answers with a model that's very quick, or more thoughtful, deeper answers with models that are slower. Eventually the small models will become much more capable, and you'll get an instant answer. But yeah, where all these different tools are, it is challenging.
Especially when the commentary has outrun it by so much. You know, you have very compelling, very interesting, high volume communicators on X and YouTube, let's say, for example, that are talking about these things as if they are the new menu item at Taco Bell. And I mean that only to say that you can always go where Taco Bell is and buy the new menu item. There's no confusion as to where you get the new chalupa. But there is a lot of confusion as to, Oh, Nano Banana Pro, it's super easy. Go into AI Studio Pro, get your API key, go to replicate, and then enter that in and you know, use a seed image that, like, you know, so it's like there's just a lot of steps in a way that has yet to meet the market. It just one of those moments where you were reminded, like, these are still such early days.
Yeah. It's still exciting though. I'm
very excited.
I'm very curious to see 6 months from now where we land with group chat, with ChatGPT. Brian pointed out the advantage of having these separate chats for each one of the shows that he works on. I think to your point, Justin, like, yeah, I want to do all my conversations inside of a ChatGPT chat. I just want it to be as
I want to have the option.
Yeah. I think that this is a portent of things to come. We saw that with Sora, they've added group chat in there, and we see that OpenAI is taking that more seriously. Yeah. And although we do the podcast, I don't have any inside knowledge on what the thinking or where they're headed with that, but I was excited to see that the group chat was coming out, because that's been a feature I wanted for. I built that into my AI channels app, which OpenAI showcased back 5 years ago, because it just seemed like these things are really useful when you just have other people involved.
Well, it also just shows you how much, like, innovating at scale when you are a company that's exploding, like OpenAI is hard. And expectations are really, really high. Everybody wants a product to be everything what they want. I was very, very, very happy with group chat. I also want 5.1 Pro. So my college bets, which I was using the more advanced model on, same model that it was before.
I love seeing this dark mirror reflection of your caricature of Brian Brushwood, where it's like, man, you're so fixated on talking and expecting it to be other than the way it is. And then likewise, this is your white whale of like, I really want it to be this way.
Well, I know. I just wanted model selection and group chats. That's all I want.
Yeah.
That's my...
So what's... Yeah, there's the mobile app, by the way, you can customize the chat GPT settings for the group chat with inside jokes and other stuff. So you can write like a whole, because they try to be respectful of like just not polluting one thing from one conversation to another.
Yeah.
That's
so interesting, because I find myself, I guess we do the same thing with humans. We don't want to corrupt our reputation with one human. So if we have a question, we may go to another human and ask. And so likewise, certainly we don't have a reliable baked in amount of trust with the various GPTs. And so as a result, if I want to do investigating on something, but I don't want that to bleed over into anything else, I'll do the equivalent of put on a hat and glasses and go to an incognito browser and talk to ChatGPT. By the way, this is a fantastic exercise for anybody starting any endeavor. If you want to know whether or not you're getting into a crowded space, just go to an incognito browser and say, and describe the thing you intend to do and ask, but act as though you saw it and see if it could trace it down. If it has an instant answer and you look and you're like, oh, that is what I want to do, then congrats. You now know before you even began that you need to be a counterpoint to Neil deGrasse Tyson or whoever it is that's already occupying that spot in the public consciousness. If it has a hard time, or even better, if it starts making stuff up and then you're like, are you sure that's real? You're like, oh, that sounds exactly like it. Give me a link. In fact, there was somebody I was talking to last night. It ended up coming up with a great name for a channel and acted as though it was real. And I was like, link me. And it was like, oh, you got me. It doesn't exist yet. And I'm like, it does now. That's a great name. Yeah. That's a great theme. That's a great tagline. That's a great idea.
By the way, if you do want to play with these models, Justin threw the name out before, I do really highly recommend Replicate. Replicate, you can do Nano Banana Pro on there. You can use the Gemini 3, you can use OpenAI's models. It's a really great way to just play with these stuff and to sort of get past all the sort of challenge of this and be prepared. Like there's a great example here of Nano Banana Pro doing a engineer's view of the Golden Gate Bridge. generated in 1 minute, 53 seconds, which is, you know, where we're at with a reasoning model, but it's still incredible to see where this stuff is.
So Replicate basically gives you a play pretend computer setup to run your thing, or?
Well, it's it calls the API for you. So instead of you having to run some code locally to call the API to like do it, it just you can download code, but it's basically hosts the model, like hosts API gateways for that, handles billing, handles all that other stuff for you. Just like I have a Replicate account, I put like $100 in there and then try stuff.
Got it. So like I know that you have an LLM running on a local machine. What you're doing, you could do virtually through Replicate.
Well, yeah, like, so Google has Nano Banana sitting on their server, right? Mm-hmm. And they have API access for it, right? So I could write some code in my, you know, in an IDE or whatever and say, call the server and generate this image. Replicate, you can just go use their interface to call it. Or if I want to set up my account through Replicate to pay for it through there. But it's just an easy way to go in. Like, I'm going to show you, by the way, the perhaps the greatest announcement of the week, which I just found, by the way, on Replicate. I said, this is a walking sprite character generator. This is by Retro Diffusion. And so I said, a hipster podcaster. And so it creates these little animated characters. So what character do we want to generate here?
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch.
Of course. Sasquatch podcaster.
The podcaster.
All right. Backpack and glasses is what I imagine.
All right, let's try this. Take about 17 seconds for this. But this is what I love about Replicate is you can find all these really cool tools on here for just playing with the models. Like if I go over to, I have another tab here where you can just, you can kind of go in and see. I'll go, let me share the other tab while that's doing that.
Think of Replicate as just kind of like a marketplace for a lot of these APIs where you can just play around with a lot of them and you don't have to worry about the hassle.
Ooh, that's interesting. I did not understand that the killer feature is probably this little explore tab.
That's where I
go into explore all the time to find new models. And like, this is Cocor. This is a speech to text model, a text to speech model. I found that, downloaded it, run it on my own computer. I just found this by the Retro Diffusion pixel art creator, Gemini 3, 5.1. You can see all these different models to play with. You know, some of the incredible, like, you know, models coming out. So let's go check in on our Bigfoot sprite. More podcaster than Bigfoot.
Yeah. Apparently we all look the same with the uniform on.
Yeah.
But this is so cool. But if you want to do a game now, you can generate your own sprites in like 20 seconds and export the sprite sheet and do that. Like, I mean, that's like, you can do an input image. Carry on for a moment, gentlemen. I'm going to try an experiment.
Hey, Brian, are you aware of patreon.com/weirdthings?
What? I hear that it's the most reliable way to get the Weird Things podcast. You don't have to worry about...
Never has there ever been a hiccup in this, the most reliable engine on the internet. That's what they're calling it, patreon.com/weirdthings. Support the show. It does reliably get us your money.
Yeah, you know what? I hear that some countries are no longer backing their currency with the US dollar and instead backing it with the good reliability of patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yep. Take that, Bukele. We are the new reserve.
In all seriousness,
global reserve.
In all seriousness, you guys get exclusive access. I guess the only other way is to find it in the wild, which, by the way, some people have a hard time finding Aftertalk in the wild, After Things in the wild. So they write me and then I have to explain, look, just become a patron. Just go to patreon.com/weirdthings.
It's just, you know, no one knows.
Like you will never miss that dollar an episode, or heck, if you're awesome, how about $5 an episode or a month? whatever. You'll never notice it. All you'll know is every time you see it, you'll be like, I like those guys. I like that show.
I like it.
I like the decade plus of time that they've given us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yay.
All right. So I'm a big believer in exploration, trying these things. I think that's what's cool about the whole ChatGPT created group chat, because one of the pieces of advice that I always give people when they're trying to explore and learn about how to use AI, I'm like, create a conversation with some friends, talk to them on a regular basis, share things. Now I can tell them, go inside ChatGPT,
make a group chat,
some friends. And it's open to like the free tier and everybody, I believe that's coming out towards kind of available to everybody, which I think is awesome. And I think it's going to be a fascinating thing to see, like, what do people create? Oh, and side note about Replicate, which is pretty cool, is they're being acquired by Cloudflare. And Cloudflare is a very big global internet provider. I use them a lot. I'm a big fan of them. And so I am very, very excited about that partnership. I think it's going to be very good for people to experiment and build on top of all sorts of stuff.
What was the the recent Cloudflare announcement where it was the two sides of the coin? If I'm trying to steel man both sides, is on the one side it was to keep the web for humans. On the other side, it could be perceived as them imposing a toll or something. Wow, look at that!
Yeah, they've come up with some methods to help people. Like if you don't want to get your site scraped and whatnot, they have one thing is like called AI Labyrinth, was a tool that would make you have to like go through some sort of labyrinth. I think they're also maybe offering a protocol to let people sort of pay for, you know, agents and stuff to pay for access to stuff. You know, we have to rethink everything now. We really have to rethink everything, you know, about, you know, if you have information that devalues the information of itself, you might think of it one way. If you have things you want to sell, like Shopify is now doing integrations into ChatGPT. We're literally inside ChatGPT, you'll be able to buy and purchase things. Mm. And there's two other, that's the other direction. Like, no, I want the agents to scrape this. I want them all to have it. And so I think there's just trying to figure out, you know, I think Cloudflare's trying to help figure out like how to navigate that. I put in Justin's face and I did Talking Man and I said VFX and this is what I got.
Well, it looks almost like an old world mask. That's exploding. I look like kind of a artifact that you come upon in the first third of the game. A red herring to our cause.
Our Monkey Island, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyhow, the one I've been playing around with that's just really cool for creating small sprites is Retro Diffusion. You can go into Sora 2 or you can go into Veo and say, hey, take this image and make me a sprite sheet like this. And then you just extract the frames. It's a little bit tedious, but it's also a way you can get like really cool looking, you know, animated character stuff. Oh, look at that.
Yeah. You
know, walking Justin.
Look at that. I'm off to the races.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I asked ChatGPT to find us a cryptid story.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah. Yep.
Go ahead.
Read my script written for me. Ready?
Yeah.
Tonight on Weird Things, we need to talk about the creature that refuses to go away. You've got people in Michigan swearing they saw something run across the road on two legs, shaped like a linebacker in a fur suit with a wolf's head. Oh, by the way, we've got our new Justin graphic just came through here. Let me stop sharing. It's too distracting. It's too cool. Okay. As I was saying, you've got people in Michigan swearing they saw something run across the road on two legs, shaped like a linebacker in a fur suit with a wolf's head and eyes that shines like LEDs. Trail cams catching shadows that don't move like bears, don't move like coyotes, and definitely don't move like anything you want to run into with a full tank of gas, without a full tank of gas. And then there's the guy who claims he heard it breathing behind him in the woods, which, by the way, is the moment you immediately realize you're not the apex predator you thought you were. The Dog Man, the Midwest's unofficial unwanted mascot of Nope. Is it a misidentified animal, a creature that evolved to freak out podcasters, or just another example of how the night plays tricks on a brain that evolved to avoid being eaten? We're going to dig into the latest sightings, why they keep happening, and whether there's something real hiding between the trees, or whether it's just our species doing what it does best, scaring itself for fun. Strap in. This one gets weird. They all get weird, but this one gets really weird.
That's even weirder. Yeah. Dog man, huh?
Yes. So I'm going to pull up a...
it's its own best friend.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to go into our group chat here, and I'm going to have it create a briefing for everybody on Dogman. And that's actually where this came up from. Can you give us a briefing on Dogman sightings, not to be confused with the hit children's property? What's cool too is you can do inside the group chat is you can add web search and you can do image generation. Like I was creating all kinds of images for the chat. Let me share this with our visual listeners. Like I had it one, I was pulling up different topics, but I asked to make a poster for our episode. And that's me. That's obviously Justin. That's actually a very good Brian. And then I don't know who this guy is.
That's the villain. That's the hybrid between the three of us that it takes three of us to defeat.
He looks a bit like yes, Jeff Goldblum.
Somehow we mixed up our DNA in a thing we're not going to talk about. Nobody needs to know how that happened.
No one needs to know.
I made a prep sheet. Weird things prep interstellar comet 3i Atlas, which is the latest interstellar visitor. So side note, what's super cool about this, which we'll talk about this. I don't know if you followed the whole comet app, that whole Atlas thing, but anyhow, it's fun to just go and make, okay, so let's get our briefing here. Okay. Okay. Can you give us a briefing on the Dogman sightings? Do you guys want to see this? Do you want to, anybody want to handle this?
Yeah.
Brian's got it up on screen.
Yeah, man. The Dogman is, 6 to 8 feet tall. He's got digitigrade legs, which is like a wolf dog stance. Elongated
snout. Word of the day, everybody.
Yeah, right. I didn't want to cop to the fact that I hadn't heard that word before.
I've never heard it.
But apparently goes back before the 1900s in the Great Lakes area. We've seen this archetype seems to be very, very strong. Something human adjacent. We like to have exist whether it wants to exist or not. Usually described at observing from a distance, naturally. Moves with smooth, unnatural speed. Hunters, hikers, et cetera, et cetera. The famous cases include the road walker, the barn watcher, the growler, the runner.
Wait, what?
I don't know. These
they
are all
names.
I think it's making pitches. This, of course, is where we run into trouble because, like, okay, if we want to talk about the folklore, then at least I want it confirmed that the folk are luring.
Yeah. go into web search. Click on web search in there and say, I want you to check this.
That sounds like a great thing to do when we're not in the middle of a TV show of hosting.
Well,
a program.
You're the one saying, I want to know if it's real. I'm like, oh gosh, if only there was some way.
Sure. Okay. It's unclear to me what, as a large language, Brian, I could only do what Andrew tells me to do.
Well, all right. So dog man, like, although I don't know, man, like, is that any less invalid that we just heard about a dog man? Whether like, all right. So if that just told you that, or you just got told that by a dude at a bar in Michigan, like, it's probably is equally valid. The assumption is that the guy in Michigan has heard it from somebody else and genuinely believes it. Right. Well, that's what separates it.
I think so, because at that point I want to know what makes that guy in the bar tick. Like why does he believe it or convince me?
Even what if he's being like, wink, wink, he's like, oh, you heard about dog man, huh?
Well, and that of course is the game is to figure out whether or not we can believe him.
Yeah. Can we go back to that? Those different kinds of dog men, Brian?
Oh, me?
Yeah, I was gonna. Yeah, because you had it ready to scroll up. Now that just looks we're bordering on erotic here.
Dog man. He is a sexy beast. Sexy beast.
That's the Chiron doing that.
Yeah. Andrew, we talked about the Atlas comet in the past tense. Did they figure anything out about it? From what I had heard, the big thing is you got an object and it seemed to be shooting jets one way or another way, the way you would expect a spaceship to do. But also from what little I read, it sounded also exactly like what a marbleized comet would do if it had little, mostly rocks, but kind of pockets of ice that could be exposed to sunlight that maybe as it rotated, it would warm some up and it'd shoot one way and then the other.
Yeah. So the 3I Atlas is another one of these. They call them an interstellar comet because it comes from outside of our solar system, not meaning like just the Oort belt or the Kuiper belt, but literally was not formed when our solar system was formed.
Mm-hmm.
And some people put this thing at being billions of years older than our solar system. So it's an extremely old object. And when you get a traditional comet comes through our solar system, you know, that's part of our solar system. You know, you've got all these layers of ice and stuff, and the cometary tail is because, you know, as the sun heats it up, it drifts away following the solar wind. Here, it behaved a little bit differently, but what they think is that when you have an object that spends billions of years in space getting pulverized by cosmic rays, that makes the surface take on different properties, and you may get different chemical reactions. And so that's the explanation for why it just appeared differently and had like different colors and didn't behave like a traditional comet, because it's not a traditional comet. And, you know, you want to get weird, you know, if you're an ancient civilization and you want to explore the galaxy.
Oh, you'd probably put on a disguise per the prime directive. Disguise yourself as a
disguise. I think, what does something look like after like 7 billion years?
Nah, that's true.
You know, you just get a big lump of rock, embed it with some stuff, and just throw it out there, hurdle it on a trajectory that's going to just bounce around because it's going so fast, it's not going to get captured, not likely to get captured. Although, you know, there's been some new data about that, about like how hard it may be to actually capture objects, you know, like that there's some data that says that how we're seeing like large Jupiter size planets in places we didn't expect. And one of the theories is that planets may be formed from interstellar objects like this, that basically come into like a debris field and nucleate. Cause they say there's a problem. They call it like the 3-meter problem or something, that like the chances of debris actually coalescing together is kind of limited because they hit each other and they're more likely to kind of just, you know, go off in the same, you know, off directions. But if you had an object like this come through an early solar system when it was just a bunch of debris, it may actually act like kind of a snowball, and that, you know, we might find at the center of the Earth in the magma that there was at some point an interstellar object like this.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
So what are some of the conspiracy theories are that it's a UFO and it's not moving naturally, right?
Right. And a lot of that seems fueled by the fact that somebody at Harvard is publicly entertaining that notion, saying that the motion that they're seeing, the evidence that we're seeing, is not incongruent with it being a spaceship. And that's very exciting.
Avi Loeb, let's be very specific. Avi Loeb, who's never met an interstellar object, he didn't want to go on talk shows and insinuate, hey, this could be alien. And by the way, here's my book.
But we don't think that. We don't think it's an alien spacecraft.
No, I think he's found his fun gimmick, you know, and we did that with the last, you know, interstellar object that he was trying to say, hey, I think it could be alien. And then I'm like, nah, we think we get the physics of this.
Yeah.
But I think it's just, you know, it's a shtick. I think it could be. I mean, you know, it could be.
You never know. Right? No one's going up there and checking, kicking the tires on it, making sure that an alien doesn't fall out.
Yeah. I mean, how would you know the difference between, you know, some object that you have embedded with some sensors and optical stuff that you just send off in trajectory? But like the idea that it's self-correcting or emitting vapor gas to sort of like that, I don't accept. Yeah. I think it's just on a trajectory.
Brian, what do you think? We want to go up there and check.
What
are you doing this weekend?
I think it's go check. I think it's very, very, I, as I tend to be, I'm more fascinated by the human side of what is it that is triggering in the media cycle, this, enthusiastic, wave of focus on it. And, I suspect it's as far as the word Harvard, like when I hear people talk about it, they're like, a Harvard guy said aliens. And then, Yes, it's the same Harvard guy that says aliens about a lot of things, but now it's an interesting object. And now for the first time, you're hearing a very interesting thing and the words Harvard guy.
I kind of suspect that aliens, like so many other elements of our society that, you know, is further strataing and nicheifying, that the threshold for people to talk about aliens will be lower, but the upper end of how many people will talk about aliens is probably lower as well. Like there's just a group of people that just want to hear about aliens all the time, and we will just find that group consistently.
Yeah, remember he came up back when we had Oumuamu or whatever. Remember that one?
Dormammu. That was onomatopoeia.
That was when he first popped up like, hey, what if it's alien? I'm like, you should write a book. He's like, I'll write a book. And so now.
what if it's aliens?
Yeah.
Number one Harvard guy.
Well, and you know what's funny is in that case, if you want to make a buck and there ain't nobody doing it and the world wants somebody to say the thing to enter the public discourse, even if, you know, it's based on nothing and eventually is going to fall out of it's not going to stand up to the rigors of intellectual discourse. I wonder if in the totality of the organism of humanity, there's not a place for that. It's like, well, we have to have that conversation so that we can be done with the conversation.
I guess the question is that, are you being sincere? Because are you saying, Hey, there's a weird thing and I'm going to tell everybody it could be this, but I know actually it's probably not that, but I know that I will get more attention for saying that. You know, that's my question. Cause I remember that while he said some things, I'm like, it's like, you know, it's like the, Graham Hancock, you know, the face on Mars, you know, and that's the lens by which everything that Graham Hancock says should be looked upon. Is that he took some very, very fuzzy images of Mars of stuff and says, look, it looks like an ancient civilization there. Wrote a whole book, talked about it. And then now when he goes into ancient civilization stuff, I'm like, are we going to forget that happened? That at the time, he just, you know, took some very heavily pixelated images that looked like absolute cases of pareidolia and wrote an entire book making his claims for ancient Martian civilizations?
Yeah, well, and that's interesting because I wonder which is more valuable. If humanity needs to understand that they have gotten fooled, is it good enough to talk about seeing faces and stuff and intellectually upstairs know that it's possible? Or is it better to have been fooled and to not like how that feels so that you're on guard against it?
Nobody, but we have a poor memory like that. I think that a lot of people coming into his stuff now kind of go like, oh, he makes some very, he does the same thing he did before. Take some stuff that was, you know, poorly understood or was open-ended, whatever, make some big crazy conclusions about this, probably knowing that a lot of them are just BS, and then people go, oh, well, that's interesting. And also create a narrative that there was this massive conspiracy by NASA to hide this. There's this massive conspiracy by archaeologists to hide this. And it's like, I think there's so much cool ancient civilization stuff, Göbekli Tepe, you know, stuff like this. There's so much cool stuff out there that you don't, that it's not like, you know, when you're going like, oh, I'm the only one telling you this because there's a conspiracy to hide this. It's like, really?
Can I make a crazy pitch? I love
that, yes.
I love that crazy dumbasses sell that shit. And I love that teenagers have to go through realizing that people will say things that are not true to make a buck. And then they become healthy adults because of it. And I'd prefer that realization happen in as low stakes an environment as possible.
Again, I mean, in the scheme of things, of horrible things to happen, it's not exactly the thing I'm going to be out on the free with a sign protesting against. But if you're in your world, if most people listen to Graham Hancock watching the Netflix documentary are coming to your conclusion, I'd be like, that's great. But they're not. You know, they're walking away at the very superficial understanding and coming away at this idea that, oh, those scientists, the archaeologists are hiding stuff and doing stuff and applying sinister motivations to people. Like, I just want to dig this stuff up.
I think, I suspect the individual people go through the phase, but there's always, as a collective in the crowd of humans, a strata that seems to have never learned their lesson, but they're different humans each time, which is why we keep having to do the same things.
I would say that much like I felt like people who read Richard Dawkins and Carl Sagan, Hitchens and Matt Ridley kind of had this kind of enlightenment sort of thing. I would say there's an opposite thing out there. And I would say there are some confounding factors when I come across people who have some actually very interesting ideas that I think that don't seem very critical thinkers when it comes to politics and stuff. I find that they are very much gravitate towards other thinkers that are not analytical and objective. And I would say Hancock stuff does not come across as analytical, objective, or fair. And I think that the more likely you are to get into like, yeah, I like the theory that tells me that those guys are hiding this information from me. I like those theories. And then you find out that they're also insert other global groups that they believe theories about. I would say that everybody has a right to this, but I'd say there's strong correlation between people who gravitate towards really good science and bad science. If you gravitate towards bad science.
Yeah. I wonder, I don't know. I wonder what the alternative is because the
good science.
Well, no. The alternative of learning your lesson to not just accept all the bad science that says bad sciencey things. Like, I don't know how to cause a human to become a critical thinker without that sting of having felt foolish at some point.
I think that comes from us pointing out, hey, this is foolish.
But if that's all anybody hears, then it's just dogma to them. And they haven't felt it. You can't feel it on somebody else's behalf. You have to have believed that the coin was in that hand and you have to have pulled out $5 to bet your friend that it's definitely there. And you have to have egg on your face for it to be fully internalized. That's the part that I don't know that we get around by telling the story about it.
No, I don't know. I think there's only one part of it. I think the story is a part of it. I don't think it's the antidote to it, but I'd also say that we as magicians knew I will fool you and I will fool you again and again and again. He'd be like, not this time. As long as their belief is I am a good observer. I am a good understanding of facts and I can look at this and make up my mind without empirical evidence. That's the problem. And I don't know how you get there. You know, I don't know how we get there, particularly when, you know, you get into such low stakes stuff, believing that, you know, Atlantis is real is extremely low stakes. You know, I was just at a conference put on by the Discovery Institute. I like these people. They're great, but they're into intelligent design. I don't believe that. I don't believe that idea. And I think it's kind of a more low stakes thing than, you know, I don't know, not wanting to question if COVID came from a lab or was natural, you know? And so, you know, I get into like, yeah, I don't know. When we started this podcast, because we wanted to create a place where we love these ideas. We were coming out of a skeptics movement and frustrated by people saying, well, that's just stupid. And you're stupid for liking it.
Right. Yeah.
I remember when X-Files came out, James Randi did not like the X-Files. And I'm like, Randy, it's a show. Yeah, because people are going to believe it. People are going to believe it. I'm like, Randy, it says it's literally written by, you know?
Yeah.
And that was a thing where I'm like, I'm like, well, I think we need to explore all sorts of stuff. I think we need to be able to entertain all kinds of crazy ideas, but also use empiricism and objectivity as, you know, a way to evaluate that.
I think it's about trust ultimately. So it's like, Brian, I think your mechanism is correct. You need to kind of buy into a thing and then have that thing not pan out for you to internalize that that's not what it is. But what we want to avoid is there to be such shame that you miss the lesson. And instead, the shame is the only thing that you have on your mind. You are now retrenching. It would be better to stay ignorant than for the person who caused me shame to be right. And so therefore, I'm going to kind of like do an end around what I have just found to be unreliable information and go back into, well, wait a minute, maybe my characterization of information isn't correct. Or maybe the way that they approached their way of disproving what I had to say was incorrect. That's the problem. And that doesn't really have anything to do about belief or proof or good science or bad science. That has everything to do with if Brian or Andrew tell me that I've done something wrong, then I know it's just going to be them smirking and saying dumbass and me having to update my priors on, you know, a thing I believe. If somebody who I legitimately hate or find to be odious tells me that, then I don't know. Maybe I have a different reaction to it. Maybe I spend a lot more. My next 20 minutes isn't saying, oops, and is instead spent saying, well, I don't know. Maybe it was a thing I said. You didn't hear me that I said this in this context and not that in that context, at which point we don't get to the point, you know, in the idea where I am actually wrong and I've actually fallen for bad science, I am now not self-reflective. Everything is predicated on the idea that we are talking to each other, and I hate this phrasing because I think it gets used in all sorts of terrible ways, in good faith. And that I think is more in the spirit of two-way collegiality than it is some kind of like, I am in the right. Because people always use that in a sense of like, oh, it's a bad faith or a good faith thing. And really it just boils down to like, I don't like your tone.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, Brian, please.
Oh, I was going to say, I suspect that one of my biases is ever since I read How to Have Impossible Conversations by Alex Lindsay and Peter Boghossian, that idea of a face-saving golden bridge to retreat upon, I think a lot about it. And I suppose all things being equal, if somebody has to encounter having believed in a snake oil salesman, I'd rather the snake oil be fairly harmless than like you were talking about with high stakes kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that being fooled is great, but you have to realize that you were fooled. And I think that that's hard. Our egos get so caught up in it. I saw Peter Boghossian speak, by the way. I was at the Turning Points USA event at Berkeley, and Peter was there. And a lot of respect to him because, you know, Peter is an atheist, you know, is a person that comes from the, you know, kind of the rational community. And he really lives by what he talks about as far as, you know, go talk to the people that that maybe you have strong disagreement in some areas, but find the common cause, you know, and do that. And I think that was.
I don't know if I told you about this, but when Twitter opened up their alternative to, was it telephone or whatever what was the
talk? Telegram?
There's something.
Oh, spaces.
Yeah. He was at some airport, had time to kill. And so he just was taking questions. And so I raised my hand. I was like, I really like your book. Why don't you do the things you say in your book on Twitter? And he was just like, I don't know. You only got so many minutes in life. Like,
fair point from you and to him. But yeah, I appreciate the fact that he was there. And I think making kind of bridging, you know, the group that a lot of people would say, oh, and because for him and the speakers there, they very much want to have a free speech sort of idea. And people sort of, you know, identify with that. I think that the problem is it's like we want to protect our ego. I know I do. I know I want to protect my ego when I'm wrong. Like, I'm not going to admit right now that I asked ChatGPT if the names Brian mentioned up were real names, and it said, no, I made them up for the purpose of just trying to create a conversation about round it. I'm not going to say that.
That's
my
funny.
Ego won't let me.
But you can effectively communicate that through multiple layers of ironic detachment.
What? No. But I think about, like, I was going to use an example of like, you know, Las Vegas, you know, Penn Jillette points this out. You drive into town, it says like 90% return on a slot machine, and people go, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, they go, oh, yeah, great, I like my odds. Like, no, your odds are literally terrible. They tell you this as you drive in there. And Las Vegas is built upon people not learning a lesson. It's clearly evident in front of there. You know, we look at this with crypto and everything else like this. Like it should be, you know, you look at people who double down when they get called, you know, like the Nigerian scams, like the pig butchering scams. First, they get you for a little thing. Then you get for the bigger and bigger and bigger ones. They say that's the hard part, is that the people who come out and say I was wrong, which I won't, by the way, the people who can come out and say that, you know, that's we. And again, I agree there's political and other stakes sometimes where you just don't do that. But I think that there's points where you say like, yeah, I thought this because of this evidence. Now we have this other evidence that makes me think this other thing. That's great. I think when the evidence changes, it's a really great way to say, hey, I think I was wrong. I don't see that from some corners. I don't think we have enough examples of that. I think about myself too. Like, there are a lot of signals here. Like, I should be eating better. I should be exercising more. There's a lot of signals for that. Like, you know, if I don't work out, getting winded, you know, but I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't know. Like, you know, looking at a photo of myself when I was like 20 pounds heavier, I'm like, you know, I was that for a couple of years. There should have been more shame in that. Was in front of me every day, but didn't take.
All right. I'll internalize it next time. Next time I'll dial up the shame.
Yeah, I'm going to eat my way through this stress. So I think that in the right, you know, that's one of the things that I did when I did my critical thinking classes, is I would go in, I would do a magic trick, a simple trick in front of everybody. And I'd say, okay, let's tell me how you thought it was done. And I get all these theories about how people were, it was done. I'd say, cool. Let's figure out, like, if this was true, what else was true? And then we'd break it down and show that all their theories were wrong. And then I showed them how they all made these logical leaps that were things that weren't true. They said, I didn't touch the cards, but I touched the cards. I didn't look at the cards. I looked at the cards, all that, and go back. And it was a neat moment for people to go, aha, I see that I was, but also it was like, I was fooled in this moment with this particular thing. Next time I won't be. But some people go, oh, I just learned a lesson about observation. Because I tell people, look at everybody else around you. You know, Marvin Minsky talked about, you know, when, you know, I told Marvin what I worked on in classes, Marvin had pointed out that he loved the idea of teaching magic to young people, to students, to children, was that for one, is it they can learn that they can be fooled, but he thought even more important that they could see grownups could be fooled.
That's pretty good. That's, that's quite good. Sorry.
It's Marvin. Marvin's a very smart guy.
Smart man.
Do you want to do picks?
I got so many picks. I got so many picks for y'all. I've been watching movies on planes like a mother, like a mug. I've been watching these movies, dude.
Some of them I can now co-sign.
What did you watch?
I watched last night. First of all, weird pick. Shouts out to, it has been a minute since I actually watched a full movie on my phone, but I got in bed early last night. And I was like, I'll just start watching Death by Lightning. And then at some point I'll get tired and fall asleep. Spoiler alert. I did not. It was episode three continued to be great, but boy, oh boy, is the sound quality on the iPhone better than it needs to be. A phone shouldn't sound this good. The positional audio, there's some moment where they're showing the free love colony and I hear a dog behind me and I'm like, how's this coming out of the phone? And then I hear something else to my left behind me. Anyway, phones are great. That's my point. But also Death by Lightning is very good.
iPhone is Brian's pick. This thing's going to catch on. Brian Brushwood.
Scary enough.
Well, because
did we start this podcast before the iPhone?
No, but the iPhone was only like three years old. Yeah.
Yeah.
My point being, it's rare that I'm in a circumstance in a quiet room, not listening on earbuds, but just, you know, with the positional audio on the phone. And it was fairly remarkable.
Death by Lightning. Andrew, you on the Death by Lightning train?
I started last night. I was tired. I only got like 15 minutes into it. What I saw was extremely engaging.
Oh, that opening is instant, right? That instant, like you get it. And you're like, I'm here for it.
Yeah. And Matthew McFadden is just great. I remember when I first saw him in Pillars of the Earth. And he's one of these actors. It's been great to watch him just sort of do these different roles.
Oh, he was in Pillars of the Earth?
Yeah.
Oh man, what a great cast. Pillars of the Earth. That was, jeez.
Yeah, Pillars of the Earth was like one of these. If you, I guess that's sort of our other picks is if you look at, you know, I'm going to pull up the cast on Pillars of the Earth because you had Eddie Redmayne. That was a
Redmayne was the protagonist, and then Ian McShane was one of the baddies, right, or one of the good guys. I forget.
Yeah, yeah, you had. Rufus Sewell, Haley Atwell, Ian McShane, Matthew McFadden, Eddie Redmayne, Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, but did they have any good actors?
Allison Pill. Yeah.
All right. Death by Lightning, great. Other movies I saw. Original Lethal Weapon. The remake of The Lethal Weapon.
Really?
I saw Eddington and Civil War, both A24 movies about modern political commentary. And I need you guys to see Eddington. I'm charging the both of you to see Eddington. You need to see it. I need to talk to somebody about it because it got muted. Because it is very much diving into the world of lockdown era politics in a small town in New Mexico. You would think that you would know where it's going. And there's going to be a moment when you're like, I knew it. I knew where this was going. And then it's going to swerve you one more time like it did me.
I'm so stoked for it because as we've talked about before, I was a little bit put off by the less than universal praise on Rotten Tomatoes, which oftentimes is an indicator of a movie that I'm going to like very much because somebody has to hate it for it to be more interesting.
Yeah.
And Eddington was like, oh, I guess it's below the threshold. It's not a universal, like Weapons out of the gates. Like just everyone was like, go see Weapons. And I'm glad I did. But if Eddington, if you believe
the reason why people don't like Eddington is because it makes a decision in the third act that complicates a relatively simple political through line in a very interesting and fun way that pays off in the third act. So I'll tell you, I don't know if there is anything that I have seen that plays around with the real world conversations that were happening at that time that I have enjoyed as much as I enjoyed Eddington. Of all those things that I saw, Death by Lightning and Eddington were my two favorites.
Yeah.
Civil War, I just didn't get. I liked Civil War. It was fine. But like, you have all these journalists that are out there and they never file. Like they're just kind of out there. Like, they don't ever file their stories or their
deadlines. What kind of journalists are these?
No, there's one moment when a character's like, I got to upload these photos. And then they do the rest of the movie. That happens in like the first like 10 minutes of the movie. And then they never upload a photo ever again.
Well, at least they said it was a thing that people do.
Yeah, it's actually funny to watch those two back to back because that was, I think, a glaring omission of Civil War, which ultimately Civil War is an on the road movie that is trying to take you through a war-torn version of America, and it invents a reason why these non-military involved characters are going to be at the center of the action. So I can understand that as a conceit. But I did think that it was a big omission in that movie where they don't show how messages affect us. And Eddington, on the other hand, is obsessed with that idea, obsessed with a world that is obsessed by social media posting and how it changes us almost instantaneously.
That's great. What, any other picks? Death by Lightning's great. I'm excited to watch Eddington.
Yeah. You guys got to do it. There's literally Badlands. A moment. Oh yeah. Predator These Badlands. Lands are bad, yeah. Dog.
Enjoyed it. Really, really liked it. I dug Prey and then Predator Badlands. It's Daniel Trachtenberg, who I think did a really good job with Prey. Really enjoyed Predator Badlands. You know, my wife went in some hesitation. My wife wrote, has actually written a story in the Predator universe. It's part of one of the anthologies that 20th Century Fox published. And, you know, I went in, you know, I like Dan and think Dan's, you know, thought he did a really good job with Prey. I think he's really, you know, really making some interesting stories, and sat down and I'm like 10 minutes in, I'm like, I'm into this. And I'm like, really like this. And it was just enough of each thing you expect. And then does it really well. Then it shifts directions and great. Got to the end of it. I'm like, this is great. I'm excited about him taking over the Predator franchise and was very happy with it.
Excellent. It's all great. The mechanics are great. The blending of universes is great. On a personal note, I wish it was 15 minutes longer. I wish that we had a little more time for some of the game elements to breathe, but I understand that, you know, they're in the business of making blockbusters, but I dug it.
Yeah.
By the way, I think it's the biggest Predator movie, full stop, financially.
Not adjusted. Yeah.
In terms of opening. Yeah. Biggest opening. Yeah.
Yeah, but not adjusted. That's the hard part, though. Is now it's like, but again, it did a great job. Did a great job, and yeah, he did. He had a. It was funny because between the trailers for watching Predator Badlands and Avatar, I think I can call my favorite science fiction movie of the year right now.
Oh, is Avatar coming out this year? I guess so.
Whether you asked for it or not.
Yeah.
More Avatar.
Sure, it'll be
now
great.
They're on great. Fire.
There was a video that talked about the fact that as the highest grossing films of all time, it's a bit of a paradox with Avatar that nobody talks about them. We go see it. We're done. We leave. We don't really make memes about them. We don't make any sort of reference to them. You would almost not even think that they were there other than the fact that we all go see it.
Yeah. You know what else? Every single day we touch toilet paper. Do we talk about it? Nope. Does it perform a necessary function? Yep. Are we glad it exists? You better believe it. Do we bring it up? Nope.
Avatar, the electrical utility of pop culture.
It truly is primer for that ride you'll ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gentlemen, it's been weird.